There has been a major decision by President Bola Ahmed Tinubu that has sparked debates about justice, mercy, and security.
The president announced a list of individuals granted presidential pardon, including some convicted of serious offenses like drug trafficking and murder, kidnapping, and other heinous crimes.
For the presidency, it's an act of national healing. But across the country, the question is being asked, at what cost?
When the line between mercy and accountability blurs, what does that mean for national security and public trust in justice?
To help us unpack this, we are joined by two lawyers, Shetima Dan Azumi and Abba Hikma.
Nigeria's constitution gives the president the prerogative of mercy. It's a legal power designed to correct judicial excesses, offer compassion, or recognize rehabilitation.
But the public reaction this time has been swift and divided. Human rights groups call it a dangerous signal, one that could undermine deterrence and reward impunity. Environmental activists, especially in Ogoniland, said what's needed is exoneration, not pardon.
Even anti-drug advocates warn that freeing traffickers could encourage criminal networks and demoralize security agencies already stretched thin.
Shetima, let's start with the law itself. How should the prerogative of mercy be interpreted in a democracy struggling with weak institutions?
Thank you, Madam Selim. I'm happy to be here. And I thank the Human Girl for this podcast. I think it's timely. Now, for presidential prerogative of mercy, I think it's an old concept. It started from where we inherited our legal system, that is from the common law of the United Kingdom. And it has always been available in order to cure some errors created by the strict application of the justice system. There are, of course, certain circumstances that warrant a situation where people need to be pardoned in order to cure the stigma around them, in order to also just have a sort of reintegration and remotivation of people, a rehabilitation process. But yeah, even the Constitution recognizes that it shouldn't be a one-size-fits-all over thing, that there is kind of category, depending on the circumstances and the context, and perhaps the extent to which persons are deserving of that power by the president. So that's why the Constitution created four categories of this. As I was saying, there are four categories of what the Constitution empowered the president to do. The first of which is the power grant absolute or outright. The power to grant absolute pardon, meaning that the president has the power to just say, you are pardoned and that's it for you. Your conviction itself has been taken over by the exercise of this power, which is a prerogative of the president. And this is normally done in a way that people are removed of the entire stigma of being ex-convicts. That is one. Secondly, the president has the power to respite on the courts or the punishment or sentence awarded against a person. And this respite is to reduce or provides a temporary suspension, actually, of like a stay of execution of a particular sentence against an individual. So if I was tried for murder and I was sentenced to death by hanging, the president has the power to provide what is called a respite by the Constitution. And that respite is temporary or indefinite suspension of the execution of that sentence by the court. The third one is the substitution of the power of the president to substitute whatever it is that is a sentence given to someone to a lesser or much lesser kind of punishment. For example, one is awarded life imprisonment by the court in his sentence. The president has the power to say, I have substituted that life imprisonment to say 20 years 50 years imprisonment. Or where death penalty is awarded, the president has the power to say, I reduce it to life imprisonment, not reducing, actually substituting it. So it is the court has awarded something else. The president now giving something, substituting it with another. Now, one last thing to say before I give this blow to Abba Hikima is that the president's power to do this is by in consultation. The constitution says the president shall do that in consultation with the National Council of State. So, and this is why some people now question the subsequent, the update given by Bayo Onanuga yesterday, whether because the first order granted was that it was in consultation with the National Council of State. However, the subsequent one given out yesterday, how did it happen? Was there compliance with subsection 2 of section 175 or not?
I just want to say that there's a little shift in Nigeria. You understand what I mean? In other constitutional democracies, this power is not as absolute or as discretionary as it is in Nigeria. And that is part of the reasons why we are having all this outcry, the public outcry, out there, because the Council of State, what Nigeria has become right now is sort of the institutions that are there were kind of check excesses of other institutions. Because in Nigeria, we have a doctrine of checks and balance. Checks and balance means the president is the executive, chief executive, but he can be checked by the National Assembly. The National Assembly, you know, has the power to make laws, but whatever law they make cannot have the force of the law until it is assented to by the president. The court, which is the judiciary, as the third arm, has all the power to exercise its judicial powers, but those powers may be reviewed by the president, as in the case of the presidential pardon we're talking about. So in this case, there is a sole condition which section 175 sub 2 of the constitution has imposed, which is that the president may have to or will have to consult with the Council of State, which is made out of all the state governors in this case, and the ministers, all of that. He will have to consult with them before he may go on to actually exercise this power. And traditionally, like I said, in other jurisdictions, these powers are not, one, absolute, and two, they may be reviewed by the courts. In Nigeria, you cannot. For example, in Ghana and in South Africa, you can approach a court of law as somebody who is affected by the exercise of the powers of the president to grant pardon or to remit sentences, to say, as a victim, the principle of fairness has not been exercised or has not been observed. And so for that, you can challenge that power. But in Nigeria, you can't. And then secondly, like I said, the Council of State could be said not to have done its work in this case, because it is rather embarrassing that a whole list of drug pushers, you know, convicted felons, and what have you, made up this list. Cases that have attracted widespread public condemnation. And the justification for this kind of exercise in Western democracies, or rather in civilized democracies, is simply to either maybe decongest the prisons or to kind of reflect the imperfection or the fallibility of human. Because even courts can make mistakes. There are cases where somebody could be convicted only for it to be realized, perhaps after a lot of years, that the commission was wrong and it could be final. And that's why in the case of almost all the Supreme Courts of the land, they would see that they are final not because they are infallible. They are infallible because they are final. So, like I am saying, the justification, even though in Nigeria, these justifications that people look at or that countries look at to extend this sort of thing is not actually a condition in Nigeria, but traditionally, before the president could just wake up one night and say, because Section 175 has given me the power to do this, and so I'm granting pardon to XYZ, certain considerations, it's only fair and logical to think that certain considerations are actually looked at before the president goes ahead to exercise his power. So in short, I think Shetima has given us a brilliant recap of what the section entails, or what part, or what Prerogative of Mercy entails. And I think we will have to be waiting for you to now maybe perhaps ask the next question before we can delve into other areas.
Yes, thank you very much, Abba and Shetima. Picking on what you just mentioned about the public outcry and the authority of the president, we have heard before that justice must not only be done, but seem to be done. So how do you think this decision of the president rather is affecting perception, especially among victims who felt that justice was served prior?
This is a very brilliant question, and I think I would be happy to answer you. You see, this statement is accredited to Lord Denning. The name a bit skipped. Okay. Lord Denning is the master of the rules. Mm. He is one lawyer that every lawyer and law student is aware of. So he says actually that justice must not only be done, but must be seen to have been done. You see, like I've always questioned, or I've always disagreed with people who think justice, or rather, yeah, justice is kind of incompatible with logic. I have always disagreed with this sort of people. Common sense, justice is very close to common sense. You can't divorce justice, common sense, reason, rationalism, and all of that away from justice. And any justice that cannot be seen to have been done by the common man on the street, and that's what we call common sense, you know, a reasonable man's test. If you apply a reasonable man's test to any justice which has been rendered and it doesn't fit, you can just beat your chest and boldly say that justice has not been done. And they also say that justice is actually a three-way traffic. It's justice for the prosecution, that's the complainant, justice for the defendant, that is the person facing the law, who will eventually become convicted or become a convict, and justice for the society. And I want to maintain that justice for the society, which is the third lane, is always more important. Why? Because as a prosecution, a lot of people have turned to persecutors. Many people who are prosecuting cases in court are simply persecuting people. There are so many examples that I can give you on this. I believe Shetima too can give you a lot of examples. And justice for the defense, which is the second traffic or the second lane, also matters, but not as important as the third one, because a lot of defendants are also looking, are only looking for ways to get themselves exonerated. But justice for the society or for the public is the most important lane, yeah, because it is the one that the society will reason with. It is the one that will reflect and that will have the ripple effect needed to have a sane society.
Thank you so much. That's so enlightening.
Brilliant.
So let's bring this home back to Nigeria's border insecurity, the broader insecurity in Nigeria. We are dealing with persistent banditry, kidnapping, drug networks, and terrorism. So in this environment, every signal from the government matters. What happens when citizens watch convicted offenders walk free?
So, Alhaji Salim, I think where this whole thing revolves around the strength, or otherwise, of our state, of Nigeria's state, and the institutions of the state. Now, let me ask you for a very honest question. I ask these questions because I want to know something. Now, who protects or secure Nigerian borders? Now, the immediate question that comes to mind, you would say customs or immigration. These are not people that secure borders. Border is the entire territory, not entry points, but the entire Nigerian geographical territory, all those forests, all those ungoverned spaces where people just walk in and walk out without any check. These are the places that matter, and these are the places where all this, the issue of drug, the issue of proliferation of arms, all these things you mentioned, These are the places where nobody would carry drugs into Nigeria through the main border entries. Nobody will do that because he knows that there are soldiers, there are immigration, there are customs officers there. So, but Nigeria, unfortunately, does not have any framework to secure those borders. That is number one. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, so countries that don't have a lot of, they don't have robust kind of regime for border security and protection have enforcement of laws and orders as something they take very seriously. Another example with Ghana and South Africa. You see, the borders around Zambia and all those neighboring countries with South Africa, you would find that there are a lot of porousness there. Porosity exists. But law enforcement in South Africa and Ghana are very strong. That's why they don't metamorphose into some sort of terrorism outright. But now, as if that is not enough, you have another situation in Nigeria. And that is that the fact that these criminals, these felons, these convicts, even if they are convicted, there is a room for them to be exonerated almost completely. Mm-hmm. Now, and this is done, sadly, by the very people that are spreading the cliche on a daily basis of fighting crime, of fighting insecurity.
So what do you think the balance between forgiveness and accountability comes into play for us, especially when our government is so fragile?
So I think this is where you have to do some weighing, you know, before you take any decision. And generally, every sensible person would not just wake up in the morning and decide to begin to exercise the powers vested in him without some calculation, without some reason. So accountability, on one hand, is very, very important, especially in our present realities. Nigeria is a country where people have lost hope. We need to be fair and honest to ourselves. And the only set of people that can do this is the ruling class. They are the ones to lead. No country in the world has ever gotten better by itself. And people will not just wake up in the day and begin to do the right thing. It takes someone to lead. It takes someone to show example. So in Nigeria, what our leaders have succeeded in doing is to erode all the trust that we, the masses, have in them. They have eroded all the trust that we have, and justifiably so, because they have done anyone entrusted with a kind of position or with some kind of trust, he breached that trust. Mm-hmm. He breaches that trust. So this is where I think, you know, what we were talking about before, I mean, the loss of trust or confidence between the leaders and the masses. I think the leaders have given Nigerians so many reasons not to believe them and not to trust them.
Right now, there's a public outcry, and I feel like Nigerians, that's the most that we always do. We shout, we make noise on social media, and then it dies down. Mm-hmm. So what should we do aside from, even though I'm not saying that's not productive, that also yields results, but what's a more definite path to follow for us to make that process or this process more credible and just?
Okay, there's something I notice among people, especially the masses. When I say the masses, I mean those who are being governed by the elites and by the ruling class. You know, very few of us actually care about what goes around in governance. People feel the only money they own is that in their pocket, or the only money they earn is that which comes through their accounts at the end of the month, and so far, you know, and so on. People really don't care how much is being stolen, or how much is Nigeria making, what are the tax, the revenue sources. I mean, what has each of the revenue sources, for example, yielded in the year or in the month, and all of that. People hardly care about this. And people kind of are comfortable with mediocrity in this country. People like to be comfortable with substandards. And including those of us that have been exposed to the standards, because a lot of people have been exposed to the standards, to the right way of doing things. But they will come back here and begin to behave as if they have never known what is the right thing to do. So I think, and like I have always said, you know, it's just like all this chicken egg argument. I mean, is it the people that team up, you know, to get the leaders to do the right thing, or is it the leaders that I have always gone with the argument that it takes a leader, you understand what I mean, to lead and to correct the vices in the society. Because I have never, throughout my readings, I have not read a lot, but I have never seen an instance where people on themselves just decide to gather together and begin to correct whatever wrong they have been doing. It always takes a leader to lead by example. So, but as people, we have duties. Even the Constitution has given us duties, you know, duties of a citizen. For example, we have to be good Samaritans. You understand what I mean? And this is a very broad term. I mean, right is always known and wrong is always so apparent. So you may choose to do what is right and all of that. So at individual levels, yes, we should mend our ways individually. And then the electoral processes matters a lot. If you look at the Nigerian population, for example, about 220 million, and the number with which presidential candidates get elected into the helm of affairs of this country, that tells you that, and the fact that we have a youthful population in Nigeria, that tells you that, that explains to you the level of apathy that's out there in the polity. People just don't care. For example, Tinubu gets elected with less than 9,000 votes. You understand what I mean? 9 million votes. You understand what I mean? So if you take the aggregate of all the votes cast, it's about just about 20 million or so. And we are about 200 million. And the eligible voters are over 90 million. So these are issues. People should wake up. What does it take us, for example, to look at Shettima and say you're our next president and then team up behind him and get him to the right? I mean, what does it take us to make Salma the next senator or something? You understand what I mean? It's all about, it's a decision thing. You understand what I mean? So as a people, we need to have that consciousness. You understand what I mean? To be able to do the right thing. But in this country, I understand people are always struggling with what to eat. They are struggling with... There are people that their only problem is that let them be secured. They only want to be secured. They don't care whether they eat once or twice. They only want security. In their case, let them eat once in a day. They are good as long as they are secured. So tell me how somebody like that would have the time, for example, to begin to worry about what revenue Nigeria makes or who steals what. So, I mean, answering this question goes to the roots of our problems in this country and also our inactivity as a people. So actually, I believe if you give us the whole of today, we may not be able to adequately do justice to this question. But in essence, I believe we should be mindful of leadership. We should be mindful of who gets elected, who manages what. And as a people, it doesn't have to even wait. You don't have to wait until elections. In the Constitution, there are remedies like recall. We should be able to, it doesn't have to be successful, but we should let us be seen to be recalling some of our lawmakers who are there warming seats, doing nothing. You understand what I mean? In the case of the judiciary, which is the third arm, we have examples of very corrupt justices in this country. Let us file petitions against them. It could be online petitions. Let us talk about them. And that is why media has become whatever it has become right now. Whether we believe it or not, media is a hot estate and plays a significant role in checking excesses of these three, of the remaining three arms. So I think we have a long list of the things that we have to do. But at the core of all of this is to be mindful of who gets elected to actually man the affairs of men in this country.
Thank you. This is the issue. Abba pointed them out in the most layman term. One, you have the issue of a passive political culture. Citizens don't really pay attention to matters of governance. They don't even care who gets elected, so long as they have their. I just saw a post somewhere that one. So it's only one tribe. This guy that was declaring that only this tribe should be governor of this state. Do you understand?
Yes.
Wow. He made a declaration. So long as they have people of their own sentiments, of their kinship, whatever, mediocre reasoning at the helm of affairs, they don't care of what are the consequences of that. So this issue of passive political culture is only there. It's always there. And it's at the core of the problem. Now, the issue of what is our sense of public accountability? Now, if you have, you are still dealing with a lot of issues of illiteracy, issues of mediocrity of low expectation, as Abab rightly pointed out. People are comfortable with mediocres, with people low level, least reasonable, least educated, least accountable amongst us are now our leaders. Why do you expect that something is going to go right? So mediocrity of low expectation, issue of public accountability, passive political culture, it's only that. Now, this issue of public accountability, there is what is called, see, APA also pointed it out, civil rights and obligations of you as a citizen, as a Nigerian. The Constitution created civil rights for you, but also gave you civil obligations. And one of these obligations is to ensure that, now you have a president that was elected with less than 30% of the total votes cast. That is one. Two, if you take less than 10% of Nigerians voted for this man to be president, it's not his fault because he didn't ask Nigerians not to come out and vote. Perhaps you can talk about all the conspiracy around all those things. So just to make it, to shorten the conversation, we have to look at these four issues. But I agree with Abba that the concept of the philosopher king needs to be looked at by Nigerians, bringing people that are educated and surrendering in the process of our social contract through elections to surrender our rights to these people because we believe they know more than we do, and then let them be able to exercise what is right. Now, when you look at that concept of philosopher king and you look at Nigerian situation or everywhere in the world, nowhere in the world do citizens on their own, do what they produce, get angry and start a revolution or vote out whoever is in power and vote in another person. Now, if the person you bring in after the revolution or after the election is worse or the same as the person that was there before, what can you do? We've seen that with Tunisia. They removed Zainab Abidine Ben Ali. They brought someone. We've seen the Arab Spring entirely is an example of how you can just get things worse. Gaddafi, the people that started the rebellion against Gaddafi, supported by the US, and now where is Libya? So there is just too much there is just so much that citizens can do, but it's never enough. You have to have the right people at the helm of affairs before you can get things fixed up.
Indeed. Thank you so much for those final thoughts. We really appreciate your insights, and I wish we could go on and on, but we can't. So thank you so much for your thoughts. Selma?
No. Thank you. And I think just to hammer on what Abba Hikma said, and also Shesima, picking from what each of you have said, yes, as Nigerians, I think we are still stuck in survival mode. That is our sad reality. Majority of us, not excluding myself, are stuck in survival. But then we also need to not forget that as citizens, we have obligations towards Nigeria as a nation. So thank you very much for serving.
I was waiting for Mala Abba to also mention that I would be the governor. He said Shetima the president.
Let me even point it out. Don't mind Abba's humility that he hasn't read a lot or that Shetima should be governor. Let him be first. He has the largest, human rights goodwill, as far as I know, in around Kano and
Shetima, I beg, is enough.
You should forget about.
I will someday, create a session to tell people who Shetima is actually, as far as I
know. Well, John, please share the link, sir. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
All right, thank you guys.
Thank you, Malafa. Thank you, Selim.
All right, thank you, Shetima.
Ultimately, pardon should never mean permission. It should be a tool of justice, not an escape from it.
And when used without clear standards, it risks feeding the very crisis it claims to heal, which is impunity.
The presidency may call it mercy, a pardon, but for many Nigerians, it's another reminder of how justice bends at the top and breaks at the bottom.
Thank you, Shatima Danazumi and Abba Hikma, for joining us.
And thank you for listening to The Crisis Room.
But before we go, what crisis are you paying attention to?